This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is Brooke with the On the Media Midweek podcast. When stories, moments, and ideas, even memes, go viral on the internet, a good question is to ask why. Some tug at our heartstrings, like Charlie bit my finger. Others are just silly, like Bernie Sanders and Big Mittens. But a few rise in the digital ranks because they make us argue. We pick sides, and then we pick fights for and against people we don't know. That was the case this week regarding two women who met in Boston over a decade ago. Dawn Dorland and Sonia Larson were the subject of an article by Robert Kolker in the New York Times entitled "The Bad Art Friend." Dorland and Larson were both regulars at Grub Street, a nonprofit writing center known for literary workshops and events. And as far as facts go, that is at least one that everyone in this story will agree on. The tale is one of two writers in extremis over purloined letters, iffy intentions, and charged feelings. But for the internet, particularly the world of Twitter, it was about so much more. So we called up a friend of ours to talk about his review of the story and the debate. Journalist Michael Hobbs is host of the podcast Maintenance Phase. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so let's start with their initial meeting. The story in the New York Times jumps to 2015, I think,
yes.
When Dawn,
yes,
who had moved away from Boston to L.A., made a big decision to donate a kidney,
yes,
to a stranger, just to,
yes,
put it in the bank. And, yep, and then she made a decision to create a Facebook group about it.
Yes, she created a private Facebook group. It's not totally clear how many members of it there were, but Dawn says it's roughly 20 to 30. Sonia says it's 250 to 300. It seems like from all of Dawn's correspondence, it seems quite clear that she was using this as a private group for close friends. And the pinned post on the group says, "Hello, this is a group for my close friends." And she, mm-hmm, says it's basically something that when you go through one of these major medical procedures or something, or, you know, if you have twins or something, you're going to be answering the same questions from a lot of your friends. So, mm-hmm, Dawn's idea, or at least the way that she describes it, is that she wanted to create this private Facebook group to sort of tell everybody at once. Like, this is,
right,
what I've decided to do. I'm donating a kidney. This is why. And, you know, share, like, whatever private reflections she had that she wanted to tell her close friends and not, mm-hmm, necessarily everybody on Facebook.
Sonia's on it, right?
Yes. So Sonia is one of the people who's on it. It seems clear that Dawn considered her a close friend. It doesn't seem like Sonia considered Dawn a close friend. They had been sort of in the same circles, like writing literary circles in Boston for almost 10 years at this point. Sonia says that they have never actually been in a room by themselves together. So it appears that Sonia does not consider this to be a particularly close friendship. But, mm-hmm, Dawn's argument is that, like, well, you know, we go to the same literary events, we know the same people, we go to the same dinner parties. You can still form closeness with somebody through sort of larger group events without necessarily, mm-hmm, having like a one-on-one friendship. It doesn't mean we weren't close.
Right.
By the way, it feels,
right,
so weird to be litigating this in public, by the way. Like, we're two random women friends. It feels really wrong to be doing this.
We're going to discuss why we're doing this in a moment. But first, just to clear up the story, to speed, mm-hmm, it up, tell me what goes on during the Facebook group that we may not have seen chronologically in the story done by the Times. It does come up later.
Well, this is actually a kind of an irrelevant detail to the story, but it's one that the New York Times puts very early in that story, and I think ends up kind of poisoning most of the readers against Dawn very early in the story, mm-hmm. even though it's not all that interesting or important of a detail ultimately. But after a couple weeks of this Facebook group being around, Dawn notices that Sonia is viewing all of her posts. Because when you look at your post on your own private Facebook page, you can see, like, John viewed your post and Bob viewed your post. Like, you have a little bar that shows you who's viewing them. Mm-hmm. And because it's a small enough number of people who are in this private Facebook group, Dawn notices, like, Sonia's looking at all of the posts. And she hasn't liked any of the posts. She hasn't commented on the posts. She hasn't reached out to say, hey, good for you for donating a kidney. A lot of people need kidneys. So there's been no engagement, but she's looking at all of them. And I think mm-hmm. to me, this is why the sort of the closeness of the friendship is important, because obviously it's like extremely weird behavior to reach out to somebody that you barely know and be like, why aren't you liking my Facebook posts? And that's kind of like mm-hmm. the way that it's presented in the Times story a little bit. Like this would just be really aggressive and weird behavior. But it makes more sense if you think of this as like a very small group and Dawn, who thought of Sonia as her close friend. And if you imagine, like, you know, I've just had a baby and I have this group where I'm like posting a bunch of baby pictures and one of my close friends is looking at all my baby pictures, but they haven't said, hey, congratulations, or like even sort of a perfunctory mention of this huge life event that I've had. So mm-hmm. it seems clear that that was the way that Dawn was perceiving this, that like I've just done this big thing, like I've brought this major activity into my life and I've had like a relatively risky surgery and Sonia's looking at all my posts about this, but she's not saying anything to me. And mm-hmm. all my other writer friends, like this kind of writing world in Boston, all of these people who I thought I was close with, I'm like bumping into them at things and they're not mentioning this to me. And it just feels kind of mm-hmm. weird.
And so what was going on that Dawn didn't know about in this period?
So we now know from all of these excruciating group texts that have now been leaked as part of Discovery. Again, I feel so wrong knowing this. But Sonia and the other writers in this writers group were mocking Dawn quite a bit. Like, she was kind of an object of ridicule to them. They came up with an acronym in all of their emails. They called her DFD for Dawn Effing Dorland. That it was enough of a topic of conversation, this kind of cringy woman that they all knew, that they came up with an acronym so they didn't have to type out her name every time. And so mm-hmm. a lot of these emails and group texts and Facebook chats are now part of the legal record. And we can see that, you know, effectively everything she was posting on Facebook, they would text and be like, oh my God, can you believe what she posted now? Like, oh, it's so cringe. And a lot of these posts were related to her kidney donation, because it seems that, like, Dawn was honestly pretty annoying about the fact that she had donated a kidney, but also the U.S. doesn't have a lot of kidney donors, and it's literally a life-saving donation. Like, the U.S. needs many more people to be doing this. And so it's also mm-hmm. kind of cringy to be reading these group texts about, like, can you believe this woman who donated a kidney, and she's talking about it on Facebook, when, like, that's kind of what you're supposed to do when you donate a kidney. And also, like, she did a good thing, and, like, I don't know, maybe she just, like, gets to be a little bit annoying about it.
You mentioned the suit. Let's talk about that. So Sonia starts working on a story during the time that this Facebook group was active?
Yes. So just after Dawn reaches out to her to say, hey, I noticed you're not really doing anything with these posts. Are we still cool? Is anything going on? Sonia starts working on this short story, this officially fictional short story. We now know that she took a letter that Dawn wrote to the ultimate recipient of her kidney. She wrote this letter that was kind of a little bit self-congratulatory, not super self-aware, kind of, you know, I've done this thing and, you know, I've been thinking about you and the gift that you're going to have because of me. And you can see how people would look at it and it would be like a little bit like, oh, maybe tone it down. Like, I sort of get that emotional reaction. But what we now know is that Sonia appears to have essentially word for word copy-pasted this letter into her short story. And her short story is about a woman who receives a kidney from a donor and then receives a letter and sort of has somewhat of a relationship with this extremely cringy, extremely entitled, obnoxious woman. And this woman is very clearly based on Dawn. So in early drafts of the story, this character's mm-hmm. name was Dawn. And other people in their writing group mm-hmm. who read the story at that stage have emailed Sonia and said, like, yeah, it's really clearly a takedown of this woman who we know. And, like, you've written a story mocking this woman that we know and kind of, like, using her actual words to mock her. And there's also a weird professional element of this, too, that also doesn't really end up in the New York Times story, that Dawn was a student in workshops that a lot of these writers were teaching, and she was also sort of a lower-level employee or lower-level fellow at this same organization that Sonia was much higher up in. So these are also people who are part of this, like, professional writers collective kind of mocking one of their students and one of their colleagues to each other as well.
So then in the summer of 2016, Dawn finds out that Sonia has written this short story and even read a draft aloud at a bookstore in Boston. Mm-hmm. She learns it through a friend's comment in her Facebook group.
Yeah, this poor guy, he's now part of the New York Times. All he did was he went to a reading and he's like, hey, you wrote a story about a kidney donation. And then he tags Dawn and he's like, Dawn had a kidney donation. I wonder if that has anything to do with it. Just like a friendly kind of like, hey, these two things are about the same thing. And he, like, you know, he's swatting this hornet's nest, having no idea that that's what he's doing. And then, of course, Dawn reaches out to Sonia and is, like, kind of breezy. It's like, hey, I heard you got this new fellowship. How are things? You know, how's John? Like, kind of normal catching up email. And there's one paragraph that says, hey, I heard you're working on a story about a kidney donation. Do you mind if I read it?
Mm-hmm.
And then thus ensues this, like, long email conversation back and forth where Sonia essentially says the story's not finished yet. I'm not comfortable showing it. You know, I'm sure it sounds like it's based on you because you went through this last summer, but it's actually totally different. It was like a seed of a story, but it just, you know, creatively it went in a completely different direction. And we now know from all this discovery that that was a lie, that the story was not only finished, it was published. And she was behind the scenes emailing the publisher to say, there's some word-for-word stuff I took from a Facebook post from somebody I know, and I don't feel great about it. Do you mind if we edit those sections? And there's also texts indicating that she's like, oh, man, Dawn's asking questions. Mm-hmm. I know I took this wording from her Facebook post. I should probably change it. So Sonia is completely aware of what she's done and behind the scenes is working to change the wording so that it's better disguised by the time Dawn finds out about it.
It takes a while for Dawn to actually read the story.
Yeah, it comes out in 2017, but she doesn't end up reading it until 2018, partly because it's behind a paywall. I don't know how much it cost, but she didn't want to read it. Also, I think on some level, she probably believed Sonia that, like, well, she says it's not about my kidney donation, so, like, I don't need to rush to read this. She's also in other places said, like, I think it would be too hard to read this, like a close friend writing about my experience who, like, didn't really talk to me about my experience while she was writing this. Like, she was hurt that, like, well, you know, you don't know that many people who went through a kidney donation, and it's something that, like, vanishingly few people do, and yet you didn't really reach out to me to tell me you were writing a story or, like, ask me about my experience at all. So she just sort of avoided reading it. And she only reads it in 2018 once it ends up on the website without a paywall of something called American Short Fiction, which is, like, a short story publisher.
And this reads like a takedown of Dawn, but Sonia says that this story is about white savior complex.
Yes.
That the person who donated the kidney was doing it principally to center themselves in someone else's story.
Yes. And in the story, the character that is based on Dawn is not the main character. The protagonist of the story is a Chinese-American woman who receives the kidney from this white savior lady and receives the letter. And then the white savior lady comes over to her house for, like, this kind of awkward brunch situation. And it ends with the white savior lady, like, taking a selfie of both of them. So it's very clear that this story, like, the author and the character in the story both have a lot of contempt for this character that is very clearly based on Dawn. And the letter that is in the story, it's been changed. The wording has changed. But it's like, in the same structure as Dawn's letter. And there's a couple similarities. And so Dawn can sort of see
that are really strong, the emphasis of the word you, you know,
yes,
which is underlined or italicized in both, that kind of thing.
There's a couple little artifacts where you can tell that it's based on Dawn's letter, but it's not as bad as the earlier version that had been almost word for word. But then where some of my sympathies start to shift is that then Dawn goes into battle mode and starts contacting the publisher of this short story. She contacts a book festival that's publishing an anthology that features the story. She files a copyright so that her own Facebook post is copywritten. She emails what appears to be, like, everyone that she and Sonia know about, what are your policies on plagiarism? And, like, did you know that one of your authors might have plagiarized? And she kind of goes on this wide campaign of, like, telling people that Sonia has effectively plagiarized this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think importantly, it's not actually Dawn who sues. It's actually Sonia who gets a lawyer and sues Dawn first. So she sues Dawn for tortious interference, which is when somebody else is basically interfering with a contract that you have, saying like, don't hire Brooke Gladstone because like she's a triple murderer or something. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. So that's what Sonia sues for. And then Dawn kind of countersues for the copyright stuff. And then it just gets real boring. And this has been in the courts since 2018. And there's like suing each other over the discovery stuff. Sonia's suing like her own lawyer or Dawn's lawyer or something. Like there's all these weird meta lawsuits now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it must be tens of thousands of dollars at this point. It's just become this extremely ugly legal battle. And this is how we got all of these text messages coming out, all of these old emails. There's like, they're litigating, like there's literally hearings about like how good of friends are they? Like, please demonstrate evidence of like how many times you met Sonia before this. Like it's just become this deranged exercise in just legal weaponry against each other.
Yeah. In your review of the story, everything is in chronological order. This wasn't the case, as we've noted in the original article. When you've told stories in the past, complicated historical stories, you really try and stick to the chronology. You don't reserve some facts for later to create a bigger impact or something like that, although that's very common, especially in podcasts. but why the chronological approach?
This started out as like, I have a project due and I was procrastinating and I was looking through all these legal files and I was like, well, for me to understand what I think about this, I like need to know the timeline, because so much of our adjudication of morality comes down to, well, like, who knew what and when, right? Like, when did Sonia decide to do this? And what did she tell Dawn? And when did she contact her publisher to say, please change the text? Like those things, for me to judge whether those are immoral or unethical acts, I need to know when they happen and what she knew at the time and what else was going on. So once you put everything back in order, to me anyway, it seems like a clear case of somebody lifting text from their friend's Facebook post and then writing an entire story mocking them while lying to their face about it. But if you read the New York Times story, you would not get that impression at all, because the New York Times story is all told from Dawn's perspective. It's kind of the story of Dawn, and when Dawn learns information, that's when the reader learns information. So Dawn did not know anything about these group texts until very late, right? Until this legal case had already been going on. So you're 7,000 words into a 10,000 word story by the time you find out that everything she was saying about Sonia was true, right? So it's easy to see her as kind of paranoid and annoying for a lot of the early parts of the story, because you don't know that she's kind of going to bat to get this story taken out of these festivals, because like what she says happened, happened. It's weird to save that for a twist.
So this story, as you mentioned, has become a bit of a Rorschach test, and people pick different sides passionately. I think of The Dress of 2015. Some thought it was gold, some thought it was blue. To answer the fundamental question, who is the bad art friend? You say, why not both?
Yeah. both sides. You love both sides journalism on the show, so I thought I'd come here and practice that. I mean, can I ask, Brooke, what did you think of the story when you first read it? What was your take on it?
Well,
what's your baggage that you bring to this?
Yeah. I thought Dawn was really well-intended, and I have the baggage of a friend who really needed a kidney and couldn't get one, and fortunately, he didn't die. But he did sort of say, you know, you can contribute to this bank. And I didn't, because I was terrified of donating a kidney. So I understand what a big deal this is and how hard it is to recover from, because I looked into it. So I was impressed with what she did. But I also thought that she was centering herself, and I've had lots of people in my life who do that, and I find it really frustrating on many levels. So then I found her kind of obnoxious. Sonia, I could not figure out. I think that one thing it's interesting that you haven't addressed is the fact that people do steal from other people's lives all the time. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, Donald Margulies, who wrote a play called Collected Stories, which is just mm-hmm. about stealing other people's work. It is something mm-hmm. that writers kind of do. You have to sort of expect them yeah. to do it. And this evidently was a good story. A lot yeah. of people thought this was quality writing.
Yeah.
Does that matter at all?
My advice in the article that I wrote about it was that, like, Sonia should have made it a bone marrow donor or somebody who adopted a kid from Ethiopia and was, like, really insufferable about it. And, like, she yeah. shouldn't have, it shouldn't have been a letter. It should have been a phone call. And, like, mm-hmm. all she had to do was disguise this character based on Dawn, like, just the bare minimum of disguise. And Dawn never would have found out, and it never would have hurt Dawn's feelings. And, like, mm-hmm. both of these people can live the rest of their lives with, you know, Sonia can just have that secret in her mind. And, like, mm-hmm. I think this happens all the time. Like, we've all written yeah. stories based on, like, the terrible boss that we had, or, like, whatever, you know, whatever person we want to subtweet through fiction. I think that's totally fine. But in general, if it's a case like this where you've, you know, pretended to be somebody's friend this entire time, and you've explicitly denied to them that this has anything to do with them, and you've been mocking them behind their back, I do think you probably should, like, disguise it enough so that it doesn't hurt their feelings. Like, I think that there right. is some moral duty there, especially also considering they had some sort of professional relationship. There's some duty of morality to disguise this so that it's, like, a better subtweet so that she doesn't know it's about her. And I don't actually think that would have been that hard and still have no. a good story.
And so that's your advice to Sonia. Excellent advice. What would have been your advice to Dawn?
I think your friend did something really mean to you. I think flame her in a Medium post. Write really mean emails about her to your friends. Like, I think what she did is a really horrible personal transgression. And, like, I would cry for days if this happened to me. Like, it would be mm-hmm. so hurtful to find out that a 10-year friendship was actually somebody laughing at you behind your back for years. Like, that's awful mm-hmm. to think about, right? Mm-hmm. But Dawn's the one that sort of elevated it into this copyright claim, plagiarism, like she's committed a professional ethics kind of violation thing. And, I mean, on some level, it's defensible because these people are colleagues. And Sonia effectively, like, destroyed Dawn's career to this writing group that she knows well. Like, she effectively humiliated her in front of all of their friends. My scorn in this case is, like, more on Sonia's side than Dawn's side. But I also think that, like, this isn't really a plagiarism case. This is more a just, like, terrible friend behavior case. And Dawn is using this sort of more technical complaint to make a interpersonal conflict into, like, a professional conflict.
There's a lot of news to sort through every week, Michael. Countless feature stories. And this might be a question for the universe, but I'm directing it at you. Why did you decide to spend time on this?
Oh my God, what's wrong with me? How much time do we have? For, this is what are your rates? I mean, I think one of the things that's so interesting is, you know, Twitter has become the de facto water cooler for the American journalism industry, right? Reporters are on there, editors are on there. If you want to pitch a piece, like, oftentimes you can do a Twitter thread and some editor is going to get in touch with you and be like, can you write this up for us? Like, this is kind of where the journalism hive mind changes its mind and develops what it thinks about something. Mm-hmm. And as a result of so many journalists using it in that way, journalism, you know, anything involving this slice of society ends up getting outsized attention there. So that's part of it. I also think humans love debating etiquette questions. I mean, this is basically a subreddit, am I the asshole post in 10,000 words. Like, this whole thing is a morality play, and people are trying to turn it into something about, like, the legal system or identity politics or whatever, and that's fine. But, like, it's really just a question of etiquette, of, like, who is the asshole in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And people
mm-hmm.
love debating this stuff. It's great. It's, like, it's why people debate sports. It's why people, a lot of politics are, like, basically this type of debate, but disguised as something else. Humans love debating, like, the little narrow things of, like, who's the jerk, right? The third thing I want to say is you mentioned the dress. And I also think, for mm-hmm. me anyway, this was very dress-like in that my reaction to this when I saw the story going around and then I saw other people saying, you know, this Dawn lady is a monster and, like, I can't believe how terrible she is and she gave away her kidney just so that she could get praise and stuff. I was, like, I wasn't even, like, mad. I was more just confused. I was, like, wait, really? Like, you... I see this as gold and you see this as blue? Like, really? So this is what's so incredible to me is, like, it just, people were instantly talking past each other because I just could not see a scenario where, like, in order in this story, this woman who's, like, kind of annoying at worst is somehow this, like, you know, sociopathic criminal who only gave away a kidney so she could brag about it. I'm like, well, she did give away a kidney. And, like, we need kidneys as a country. So, like, I don't know. So it also had this very strange, like, I think people really dug in their heels because, like, other people don't understand why I would be defending Dawn in the same way that I don't understand why they would be criticizing Dawn, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, what is this guy talking about? And so it also had that feature that people were just instantly talking past each other.
And actually, it really fits the era, too, because we're at a time where we wonder whether our minds have changed about artists that we once really admired, whether it's, you know, Woody Allen or Bill Cosby or you name it.
There's also, I mean, the social media aspect can't be underplayed, too, that we didn't, you know, 20 years ago, we didn't have the technology to, you know, screenshot a cringy friend's cringy post and share it with our other friends. And we didn't have the technology to see, like, hey, you know, John has seen all my posts, but he hasn't commented. And just the amount of information that's available to us and the different ways that we can share our interpersonal relationships with each other, just, like, we didn't have as many ways of doing that back then. And I think we're all still kind of in this adjustment period where we're figuring out what life with social media is going to be like. And I think this is just kind of one of the bumps along that road of that we're still kind of figuring out what are the norms. Like, is it okay to have a group chat that, like, mostly makes fun of somebody that you're pretending to be nice to or, like, a professional colleague? Is it okay? Like, I have group chats where I make fun of, like, journalists I don't like, but, like, I like to think that I'm transparent about the fact that I don't like them. So, like, then it's kind of better. But, like, is that better? I don't know. Like, we're all kind of figuring this out because all of this is new. And so there's also, like, another reason that makes it so tempting to fight about is that, like, there's this new technology that we don't have any of the social norms to go along with.
Michael, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I will see you in my group chat.
Michael Hobbs is a journalist and the co-host of the podcast Maintenance Phase. Thanks for listening to the Midweek Podcast. Check out The Big Show. It usually posts on Friday around dinner time. And while you're at it, sign up for our fabulous newsletter. Bye.